This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND, here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look at last week's stories. I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Joey Delahunty. Today, we will be looking at crime in Bloomington Normal, recent activity in the City Council, and the resolution of the Bloomington homeless encampment situation. Recently, reports of violent crime have increased in Bloomington Normal, such as the attack outside the Bone Student Center or the Starbucks in Bloomington Normal that was struck by gunfire. We spoke to Normal Police Department's Community Engagement Officer, Brad Park, about crime in the community and how the public perceives it.
Let's get right into it. As I sort of mentioned to you before, I've heard a lot about things like the thing outside the Bone, the incident with a Starbucks getting hit by gunfire late last week. And it seems, kind of seems like there's this perception that crime has increased in the community. Is that accurate as far as you can tell?
Well, I don't have the exact numbers, but it does seem every year that our calls for service are always increasing, kind of at a steady rate. As far as the types of calls and stuff like that, without the numbers, I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, one thing I can say with, you know, what people are seeing with press releases and information that we share via our social media channels is we're definitely being more transparent with information that we're pushing out just to let the community know.
So do you think it's an issue of actual increases or rather just like the public is better informed than usual?
Well, no, I think there is an increase that's taking place. Every year there's always a fluctuation, whether it's an increase in certain types of crimes, maybe a decrease in others that we're seeing. But we definitely understand the community is seeing a concerning number of you know, whether it's the shots fired calls or we have individuals being arrested for, you know, possession of firearms or other type of violent crimes like that.
So in that case, do you think, like, people in Bloomington Normal, are they feeling safe and should they be?
Yeah, I mean, I can say that, you know, we are doing our best. Our manpower is the highest it's ever been. We have more officers on the streets currently than we have ever had. And the training that we've been receiving has been really paying off with training our younger officers what to look for, how to respond to certain types of calls. And then just our specialty units that we also have here at Normal PD have also been working very well together, you know, to solve the incidents once they do respond to those. As far as, you know, the feelings from the public, we do hear every now and again that, you know, somebody's concerned about a certain type of crime or a certain part of the town that has maybe an increase in crime or police activity. And we definitely take those and look at the statistics that we can and kind of deploy our resources appropriately throughout the town.
So what do you think people should do if they are having that sort of concerns?
Yeah, we always ask people and we try to be transparent on our social media that if they see something, to say something. Recently, a few years ago, we rolled out our TIP 411 anonymous information sharing application. So there's a couple different ways people can do that. They can download our Normal PD app on the Google Play Store or Apple App Store and can provide anonymous information to MPD through that route. They can also text their TIP to us anonymously. They can text 847-411 and then just type in Normal PD, all one word, and then what the information is they're wanting to share. So we're definitely trying to open up the, you know, opportunity for people to share what their concerns are with us. Obviously, they can call into the police department anytime as well and voice any concerns that they have. And really, as much as we have a lot of officers on the street and we're able to really look at the analytics that we're seeing with our reports and calls for service, you know, the more eyes, the better. If somebody sees something and they can share it with us, we really do appreciate that.
Earlier, you mentioned the idea of police transparency. What sort of work are y'all doing in that regard?
Yeah, so we realize working with our media partners and then also obviously with the general public that, you know, we just want to be able to push out information in a quicker fashion than we were doing in previously. So we're working on that to get that information out. We understand that kind of the news cycle that happens, you know, in our country nowadays doesn't last very long. So we're trying to push out information, whether that's us asking for information from the community or whether it's just us, you know, putting out the appropriate information that's needed for somebody that might be calling in asking why, you know, there was police and ambulances or whatever happened in their neighborhood. We're always willing to push that information out and provide that information.
Lovely, thank you. I believe that's all the questions I have for you. Do you have anything else you want to add on the topic?
Well, you know, one thing I mentioned earlier that's, I think, really important is, you know, just understanding that, you know, if citizens do see something, truly say something, because, you know, the eyes of the community is what we need. And maybe it might not be, you know, anything relatively important that we would need to follow up on, but sometimes some information, whether anonymously or being provided to us by a resident, is information that we need or we can use to really make the community feel more safe and be safer.
For more information on crime in the community, check out the full story on WZND.com.
There have been big changes within the Bloomington City Council. I spoke with City Council member Cody Hendricks about the recent events happening throughout the city. Hendricks discussed preventing crime, addressing the housing crisis, and a newly approved infrastructure plan.
What are some of the biggest points that were brought up at last Monday's meeting?
So last Monday, really the biggest thing was we approved an emergency declaration granting the city manager some powers to open up the Salvation Army in town. So they don't have some of the requirements that would allow them to house people overnight within their facility. It's something that I believe the city's been trying to work with them on and try to find solutions. But given the tent situation that we're seeing over by Home Sweet Home Ministries, the city decided that a short-term solution that only goes through until March would be to open up the Salvation Army. We're going to institute other safety practices, so we may not have exactly as the code says, but we're going to try to find other ways as far as like surveillance and additional, you know, fire safety mechanisms that we can use so that we can get those individuals out of the parking lot situation that they're in and into a building, especially with winter coming. So that was one of the bigger ones. We also got an update from the city as far as some of the different housing initiatives that they're going to attempt to do, because as you know, we're in the midst of a housing crisis. So the city is looking for different incentives, different ways to kind of cut some of the red tape to find avenues that hopefully will expand the availability of housing and also give developers, you know, an interest in developing homes within our community.
And then following up on that, what are you and the council planning to do to handle this housing crisis?
So, I mean, you know, we've been pushing and some of us have been pushing pretty strongly to look at, you know, what are different code changes that we can change, right? We have a missing middle in our community where we, you know, we really struggle and we don't have codes that always allow for duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes. And so that's one area that we can look at. There are other conversations as far as if you do infill development, right? Lots within town, are there different incentives that we can provide as far as like waiving maybe sewer hookup fees? Not everybody on the council is convinced about that, but it's something that we're exploring. You know, some of the other aspects related to, and one that I really like that we see out of South Bend, Indiana, is developing pre-approved housing designs so that if a developer wants to come in, they don't have to go through the real long process of getting their designs approved and everything. We already have designs that are ready to go, ready to be built. We just need the developer to come in and start building. And so those are kind of three areas that are looking promising. The city is still in the preliminary phases with hashing those out for us to fully consider, but I'm getting excited because I think we're headed in the right direction at least.
And if that gets approved, what would that look like for the community?
I mean, our hope is that we'd see, you know, an expansion of developers, especially local developers who want to get involved and start building. I think the biggest thing is, you know, we'd have to really communicate with our local stakeholders and developers to get them to the table and try to find the things that would really help them. And I think we've done some of that. I think we can continue to have those conversations. But, you know, if we can expand housing options, I mean, everybody's struggling between, you know, the unhoused who can't find affordable rents to move into, young people graduating from ISU and Wesleyan and high school looking for places to live and stay. You know, we're missing that. Families that want to expand and buy a bigger home, but there aren't the homes available. Older individuals who, you know, find themselves as empty nesters and want to downsize maybe to a duplex or a triplex and not have the large house that they once had. Mm-hmm. So we really need to start, hopefully, building, adding to our housing stock, because as we do that, we're hoping there's going to be shifts of people moving to other housing categories that make more sense for them, and then that in turn also opens up availability for others.
I want to discuss now about crime in Bloomington. I noticed, I believe it was two meetings ago, Councilmember Bolin displayed her window was shot. Can you elaborate on that and what your thoughts were?
Yeah, so that was Councilmember Ward. She is good. Yeah, she's in Ward 7, so neighboring me on the west side. You know, we share the west side and that representation, and we do at times see, you know, levels of crime. It was a terrible, unfortunate situation that happened at her home. Not the first time either. The first time really is what inspired her to get on the council in the first place, because she's been a strong advocate for reducing gun violence. She was successful in the creation of the gun commission, or the safety commission that we instituted a little while back. It's a little auspicious that on the same time that that committee was coming forward to present on what does the data look like in our community, you know, she had that situation of her home being shot. So it's a really terrible situation, but I think it highlights that, you know, if even our alder people's homes are being shot, you know, there is, you know, a need for examining the data and information around, you know, gun violence within our community.
And then how does the council plan on handling these crime rates in the future?
Well, so the commission, they came to us with their six-month data information, and really they were just kind of outlining, you know, what are we seeing currently? Their next task is, and they have a, I believe, a two-year cycle. So some of their tasks are going to be to bring back different proposals that they think could really help address us specifically. And so that could take a whole lot of forms. I don't have any real specifics for you at this moment. But, you know, the big thing is that we continue to, you know, have a police department that individuals feel comfortable going to, which I think we do, to report different crime that they see. But I think in the meantime, you know, we just have to be vigilant and mindful, and hopefully we'll see some policy proposals from the commission after, you know, they dive through all of that data.
And what's been the proudest moment for you serving on this term on the council?
So since I've been on, you know, I've been really happy to see that we have been investing in infrastructure throughout our community. You know, we sped up the Locust Colton projects there in Ward 4. You know, that's the community that suffered from high levels of flooding. So we sped up that project to make sure hopefully in the future that doesn't happen again. But also infrastructure projects like the downtown streetscape plan that I ran on. I wanted to see it passed, and we got it unanimously passed. And so, you know, that is a major infrastructure situation as well, right? If you drive through downtown right now, there are a couple spots in our downtown where work is being done because we have older infrastructure, and we can't keep putting Band-Aids on it, right? So to me, the streetscape plan represents a major desire by the council, a unanimous council, to invest in the infrastructure of our downtown and, you know, under the streets, but also above the streets.
For more information on this story, you can check out the full story at WZND.com under the news tab. We are going to take a quick break, but we've got some great stories you don't want to miss. Keep listening to Second Look right here on 103.3 WZND.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it, so far we've talked about crime in Bloomington Normal and the recent activities of the Bloomington City Council.
Bloomington City Council will soon vote on whether or not to declare the Holy Trinity Church as a historic landmark. The church was originally built in 1868, then rebuilt in 1933 after being destroyed by a tornado. Landmark status would make the church eligible for certain grants, but also prevent them from making certain changes in order to preserve historical elements.
Starting on September 18th, the Ecology Action Center will launch a program to research and educate about air quality in the community. The Bloomington Normal Community Air Research and Education Project, or BNCARE, will install three air quality monitors around the community. specifically in areas that face a disproportionate amount of air pollution. The monitoring will take place over the next 3 years and hopes to help reduce air pollution in the community and its associated health risks.
The McLean County Health Department has put out a statement about bat exposure and risk of rabies. So far, the health department has received more than 165 calls about bats this season. If you find a bat living in your quarters, you should try to cover it with a container and contact animal control and check if anyone has bites or scratches. They can be difficult to notice with the naked eye, so if a bat is discovered near an area where someone is sleeping, then contact is a possibility. It is always vital to seek medical attention after suspected rabies exposure, as once symptoms start to develop in humans, rabies is nearly fatal.
The 41st Annual Sugar Creek Arts Festival is getting ready to take Uptown Normal during October 5th and 6th. The festival will feature local artists and food vendors showing off and selling their products. The event will also feature live music from local artists on multiple stages.
Illinois Wesleyan has introduced a direct admission program for several local high schools as a sign of their engagement in the community. Starting on September 16th, qualifying seniors from Bloomington High School, Normal Community High School, Normal Community West High School, University High School, and Central Catholic High School will have the opportunity to directly admit into Wesleyan without having to even apply. ISU sports, and we're back in action this weekend. The football team won its first home game in a thriller against Western Illinois, 51-34. Tommy Rittenhouse and Winkers Wright teamed up to give the Redbirds second-half momentum to take down the Leathernecks. The Redbirds are back in action against Eastern Illinois on Saturday for a blackout-themed kickoff at 6 p.m.
The ISU volleyball team went winless in its trip to the Panther Invitational this weekend. The team fell 3-2 against St. Thomas on Friday, 3-2 facing off with Milwaukee University, and 3-1 in the Battle of the Birds with Iowa. The team drops to 3-7 on the season and will take on Florida Atlantic on Friday at 11 a.m.
Following the approval at last week's Bloomington Council meeting to move the homeless encampment to an indoor facility, Bloomington Salvation Army has provided new ideas going forward. Jasper Jones from the WZND news team talked to Deborah Cole, who spoke on behalf of the group, and addressed how they are handling the new facility.
How was the decision made to shift funding towards the indoor shelters as opposed to the outdoor?
I can't speak on behalf of Eastview, but at the city council meeting, they mentioned that would be coming from Eastview. But that part, I can't speak on behalf of Eastview. We haven't received any funding yet, but that was clearly said at the city council meeting. I know what you're saying.
What steps would be taken to broaden those indoor facilities, or what may that look like, do you think?
Okay, so the city said that they would be waiving some of the building codes. They asked for us to, install additional alarms, add staff, training and fire suppression, and making sure that we have clear exits. So that would be the things that we would be immediately working on.
And fire exits, you said?
Not to make sure those exits are completely clear.
Oh, okay.
Monitoring that nothing gets set in front of them, or because they're just saying when you have, they're just saying to keep them clear. And sometimes when you have people living in a facility, you have to make sure that that's happening.
Yeah, of course.
The things that we would be doing according to what they have asked us to do.
So during the time from the tent camps to more indoor, how would that, what would that transition look like, do you think? How are things going to be handled? Is it first come, first serve, reservation?
Right. So I can only speak on behalf of what we would do. So last year, I don't know if I've talked to you, but last year this happens every year with Salvation Army. We open our doors when it goes below a certain temperature to people to come inside. Last year, they weren't allowed to sleep of this year, it'll be the same thing. We're going to get ready and do these things. We will open our doors for people. If they want to, they can come in, and they would have to go through the same process as everyone else, but it would be first come, first serve. And we, you know, just open up. So the city is saying that we would be now allowed to place cots in our common area that we use for cafeteria, and they would be allowed to sleep. And those are the people that do come, which is, it happens every year, but the people who do come would have access to the same services as the people that live here. So, like, that means, like, case management, showers, meals, job services.
They'll all be taken care of, right?
Yes. So what it would look like is after supper, which is, you know, like 7 to 8, the tables are going to be rolled up and placed in the middle to create kind of a divider. Cots will be placed on the floor. This is also what we will do when we get everything. We don't have everything we need yet, but cots will be placed down and people will be allowed to stay overnight and access those services that I mentioned. And then in the morning for breakfast, those cots would have to be collected, their stuff stored, and then they would have access again to the meals, showers, laundry, case management, job services.
And I only have one more question for you, Deborah. So your facility, you said, is going to be, like, altered just a bit in the process. Do you think that the other facilities in the area, like local churches and things, will also be altered just like that, or
well,
in a similar form?
That, you know, I can't speak to any other facility because I am not sure. All I know is, you know, we are doing what the city says to prepare for people to come if they want to stay with us. And that is what we do. We care deeply about the community, and we open our doors for this. And this year is going to, sounds like, because of the city passing this ordinance, they're going to be able to lay down and rest instead of sit up. You know, last year we provided a place for people to sit. They got to watch TV and eat snacks, but they were not allowed to sleep. So this year, the beautiful thing is that these, you know, people that need to will be able to lay down and rest.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we looked at crime in Bloomington, a word from Bloomington City Council, and a plan for Bloomington Salvation Army on its indoor encampments. For Second Look, I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Joey Delahunty.
Be sure to tune in next week where we will have some more local news stories. Have a great football Sunday, and we'll see you next week.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.